Hello, I'm Stephen Scott, and this is Tech Talk. Now, you might be thinking, hang on, where's the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1? Where's the music? What's going on? Where's Robin? Where's Tim? Look, we'll get to all that in a moment, I promise you. The guys are waiting, but I did ask this week if they would be okay with me just kicking the show off myself this week, because I want to talk to you about something. So, I don't know if you're aware of this, but in February next year, February 14th to be exact, this show is 10 years old. I can't believe it. I don't know if we're the longest running tech radio show, or at least assistive tech radio show. Maybe we are. I have no idea. But it certainly feels like we've been around for a while. It doesn't feel like 10 years, I'll tell you that. But it's been an incredible time. I've absolutely loved this show, and I continue to love it to this day. And you are the reason I love it so much, because your contributions, your passion, the controversies, the criticisms, everything that I get on a regular basis just really warms my blood in a good way, I promise you. It's been such a fun time. I've absolutely adored doing this show. And that's why I'm sad to tell you today that at the end of November, November 30th, that will be the last episode of Tech Talk. It'll be time to hang up the headphones, because I'll be leaving RNIB. So whilst the news of leaving RNIB, I don't think is a huge piece of news for anybody, I think the biggest thing for you is Tech Talk. And I wanted to get the chance to come on here and explain that the show was coming to an end, to let you know, because that's only fair. You've been with me so long, you've given me the chance to be in your home and be part of your life for almost 10 years. So it felt wrong just to disappear off into the sunset and not say goodbye. So we will be doing a proper show, and we'll do a proper goodbye at the end, on the last day, on Tuesday 30th, which will actually be my last day at RNIB as well. So, you know, literally when the show finishes, I'll be leaving the office for the final time. But I just wanted to take this moment to say thank you for all your time, for all your emails, those wonderful emails that we get, so thought-provoking, brilliant emails. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for making this show so enjoyable, so much fun. I've loved it, loved every second of it, and I would not hesitate in doing another 10 years, honestly. If I was just doing this show and this show alone, I'd probably still be here till my last breath, if I'm honest. I love doing it. But, you know, I've been at RNIB for almost 15 years, and I've done a lot here. I've had a great time, but it's time to just take things a bit easier. And some of you may know that I am working on other shows in other parts of the world at the moment, and I'll continue to do that. So I'll always be around somewhere, but, you know, sometimes you just got to focus in on your own self and your own health, and I want to do that. And that's the reason, that's the real reason why I'm taking the decision to step down from RNIB. It's been a great place to work. I've loved it. I have my criticisms of this place. I have much to praise about this place. There is nothing that is perfect anywhere in life. But I can say and be sure of saying that I've been able to contribute something. And I'm pleased about that. My contribution to me, at least as far as I'm concerned for my time at RNIB, is this show. And its legacy will live on, because more and more of you have been able to learn technology, get interested in technology, get excited about it. And that was my goal. It was teaching people about what mainstream tech was available out there that could, you know, make life easier for anybody who's blind or partially sighted. And I think we've achieved that. So it's been a great run. It's almost over. And I'm sorry about that. But it is what it is. And hey, you never know. Maybe it'll come back in some form. RNIB, I'm sure, want to keep the show going in some form. But what I can tell you is, as of this moment, at the end of November, November 30th, that will be the last episode of Tech Talk, certainly with us. Robin and Tim are leaving the show as well, so no one to carry on, essentially. And yeah, that's it. So I just wanted that moment with you to tell you about it. I'm sorry that news just comes out of the blue like this. We're going to get into so many topics that will make you think, he's been awfully quiet on Twitter recently. Now you'll know why. so many things that I could have jumped on and talked about. But as you'll hear in this episode, you'll hear why we didn't get into that too much because of this news. But Let's get the guys on. Let's start the show, and we'll talk more about it in the weeks to come. And of course, we'll have a big, big celebration at the end of November to just basically say thank you to you for giving us the time for almost 10 years. Can't quite believe it. Okay, shall we start the show? Okay, let's do it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
And let's welcome in Robin Christofferson and Tim Schwartz. Hi, guys. How are you doing this week?
Hello,
Stephen.
Yeah.
Wow, what a shocker. That went from a very touching and very, I think, justifiable love letter to the last 10 years. That's a reference to February the 14th, by the way, which would have been the 10 years Valentine's Day. To an obituary. What a shock. Hopefully people were sitting down when they were listening to that.
Yeah, way to kill a mood, eh? Sorry, guys. Yeah, well, you know, this has been a long time in coming. It feels like I've been holding on to this particular secret for a very long time. And it's a secret purely because it was a decision I had to come to myself. You guys know that. You've been part of this journey. I think you're all quite sick of me talking about it, frankly. But, you know, it's out in the open now. The news is out. And, yeah, that's it. But we're not. It's not going to stop us. We've still got a few shows left. We're going to keep talking tech. We're still going to do our thing. And, you know, part of the reason I think I didn't really want to get into it too much, you know, before now, was because I didn't want it to become the focus of the show. You know, I didn't want it to become that, you know, it's just getting endless chat about why is it going, what's happening, what's going on? You know, just let's focus on what we're here for, which is the technology. But yeah, it was needed to be said. I'm glad. And I just want to say at this point as well, before we do move on, I want to thank RNIB for giving me the chance to say that, because, you know, broadcasters don't often let you say goodbye. You're often gone and that's it. And nobody really knows what goes on, and conspiracy theories are abound. I really want to thank RNIB for, you know, really respecting the audience of Tech Talk, and indeed RNIB Connect Radio, you know, in particular, actually, RNIB Connect Radio. I want to thank, because, you know, that level of support to us and respect to our audience, I think, is brilliant. So, you know, I want to thank them for allowing us to put it out there. But yeah, we are going to get all soppy and emotional in the last show, I'm sure. But for now, let's
crack on.
We will. Yep.
Yeah. Let's get into the main crux of the show this week, which is actually there's lots to talk about. I mean, as always on this show, there's always lots to talk about. Some of those emails. It's funny, right? Because there was emails that we got this week, and there were tweets I was following this week that were really, really funny to me. A couple of those tweets in particular. Around the text-to-speech voice we use for the emails. It's not popular, guys.
apparently not.
People aren't loving it. Kind of get why. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't know if I'm loving it either, to be honest. But, you know, it's what we have at the moment, I'm afraid. And you maybe understand now why we don't have someone new coming into the fold to do that, because there are only a few shows left. But yeah, we will.
It's funny about that, because as I was discussing it with my wife the other night and talking about the tweets we've been receiving, she said, well, you know, if it wasn't for the current state of things, I'd be happy to volunteer to come on and read emails for you guys. But, you know, and I'm like, well.
Now she tells us. Okay. Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, now you tell us. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're not going to be, I'm afraid, changing that too soon, although I will, just for you guys today, a couple of emails we've got coming in I do want to read. I am going to just read out myself, because I want to get through some of them this week. Some really good ones, actually. But yeah, I also want to talk this week about digital literacy. We're going to get into that, what it all means and why that's important, and a big topic of conversation at the moment for Vodafone. We'll hear about that. Also, we are going to be answering a question from one of our Technology for Life team customers. Someone has been in touch. Joe from the Technology for Life team has emailed in with the question, and it is going to cause all kinds of controversy. I am sure of it. We're also this week going to be joined by Dinos from the Tech for Life team. He is going to be talking about how to make Android phones easier to use. And I'm going to tell you about some software I've been playing with that I love. And I'll tell you all about that. And it's for the Mac, which is interesting because for the past few weeks, and probably for the last month now, I've been spending so much time on the Windows side of things. And recently I've been going back to the Mac. I just, you know what I'm like, guys. So just back and forward and back and forward and back and forward.
Yeah, we know.
I just can't seem to make my decision on this one. I just can't seem to pick a side. It's just awful. Mm. So I think I'm living in a world of both.
Well, maybe you don't have to.
Well, that's true. Maybe I just go with it. But let's talk about digital literacy, because this is a big topic at the moment. So here's the question. Is knowing how to use a computer or a smartphone of the same importance as reading and writing? Well, a new report out from mobile phone provider Vodafone says yes. Now, joining us now to discuss this is Tommy McDade from Barnardo's, a charity involved in the creation of the report, and Emma Reynolds from Vodafone itself as well. Tommy, let me bring you in first. For those who don't know, what is digital literacy?
From our perspective, digital literacy, we see it very much as an extension and part of the overall core skills family, as we put it that way. So, you know, we very much focus on making sure we can read and write and add up. And the modern world requires us to almost take those skills and apply them in the digital world. So digital skills we see is really important, really crucial. And this report from Vodafone really underpins that and underlines that.
Yeah, Emma, let me bring you in on this. Emma Reynolds from Vodafone. This report from Vodafone and WPI Economics says that digital literacy is becoming as important as reading and writing for young people's future. Tell us about this report, No One Left Behind.
Yes, thank you. Well, I think the pandemic both revealed and exacerbated the digital divide as life moved online, be it work, education or socialising. And in that context, we were keen to understand kind of what impact that had on those people who didn't have access to the skills or the connectivity devices that they needed to get online and be confident online. So this report was intended to shine a light on that divide, understand where the gaps were, and start thinking about what could be done to try and close it.
That clearly is the problem. What is the solution?
The solution is probably multifaceted. I think it's probably the right way to describe it. One of the key issues, as the report highlighted, is that 1.5 million homes without direct connectivity. That's an issue, access to the right kit, particularly from our perspective for young people, is a huge issue. We really seen that coming to the fore early stages of the pandemic, when a lot of young people were moving and having to move online, staying in the house and learning online. But you know, for a lot of the young people we work with, they maybe having to share a laptop with a couple of kids, a couple of their brothers or sisters. You know, so that's a crucial issue as well, before we even get to just looking at helping young people understand what digital skills actually is, and how different digital skills are from just simply being able to move about your various social media sites.
Emma, does it go further than that, though, in regards to cost? Because, of course, equipment, technology costs money, and a lot of people don't have that money. So how do you deal with that problem?
Yeah, you're of course right. There's some things that we can do as organisations. So, for example, we're running a tech appeal where people can donate unwanted devices that then get redistributed via Barnardo's with additional connectivity provided. One of the recommendations of the report is also looking at something like a voucher scheme for those on low income to upgrade their devices. So I think there is more that can be done to make sure that people have the right kit in their hands, and then think about how making sure that they can use it. So the skills programs that Barnardo's are running and others are running to make sure that people really understand how to navigate and get the best from the online world.
And Emma, you also believe that the government should be involved in this. Well, the report calls for this, doesn't it? It calls on the government to create a cross-department task force to agree goals on how to tackle the issue. So how would that work in practice?
Yeah, I think that's right. So, I mean, I think we need to start with a better understanding of who is digitally excluded, why, and what support they need. And then I think that cross-government task force, this coordinated approach, because it touches on lots of government departments, how actually we have a holistic plan to tackle this that also brings in businesses and lots of the charities who are working in this space. I think if we had that approach, we could really try and tackle this problem effectively.
Tommy, is one of the challenges that technology is just very confusing for a lot of people? You know, the idea of, you know, just buy a laptop and get online sounds great, but, you know, doesn't really mean much to most people in practice.
Yeah, making sense of the technology, but also making sense of how to access some key elements of support online is particularly an issue for young people that we work with. And then, you know, Emma's alluded to great support we've had from Vodafone to develop some learning for the young people we work with, called our Discover Digital program. We aim to support 3,000 young people over the next 12 months, through that. You know, that focuses on basic digital skills for young people, helping them understand the importance of protecting their own themselves online. But it's also about helping them understand how to you know, have that punchy CV, get themselves in front of an employer. A lot of young people, don't understand how to access statutory services as well. So it's a really crucial area to help them develop those skills.
Now, of course, accessibility is a big problem for a lot of people out there. And that is, of course, one of the areas of discussion that we have here on our shows on RNIB Connect Radio and here more widely at RNIB. Are the challenges that blind and partially sighted people in particular face, not exclusively blind and partially sighted people, but, you know, from RNIB's perspective, from myself as a visually impaired person's point of view, access to technology is challenging. And that's something else that we really need to focus on, Emma, is how to deal with this problem, how to make accessibility part of this conversation as well.
That's absolutely right. And one of the initiatives that we're running is called Charities.Connected, where charities can apply to us for free connectivity. We launched it at the end of the summer, and we've had applications in from charities supporting people who are visually impaired. So we've got some charities asking us for support on a digital vision project and providing them the connectivity to deliver that project. So I think that's a really important element. I also think if you think about the innovations in technology, there's massive opportunity to support people who are visually impaired. So if you think about the smart speakers and how you can, the Vodafone voice assistant, you can get information about your bills and your contracts and in different formats now, and that's increasingly important, and making sure that people can access that technology and those facilities that are out there.
And, you know, Tommy, we talked about poverty and the digital poverty that exists at the moment, and that can certainly affect disabled people directly as well in a number of different ways, especially when it comes to technology. But of course, in some ways it doesn't have to, because if the technology that's off the shelf is accessible, then you remove barriers to, say, a blind person having to spend thousands of pounds on a piece of equipment that will help them versus a few hundred pounds and is the same piece of kit that everyone else is buying.
Yeah, and see that as a real equalities issue as well, Stephen, where, you know, people, we would extend that to saying it's almost a basic right to have the digital kit and equipment, and it should be provided on an equal basis to everyone. And, you know, the issues that you've described are things that we would clearly advocate that are addressed, and make sure that we do have that default position in this country, that access to digital services shouldn't be determined by how much it costs for certain people to get the kit.
It does feel that we're at that point, doesn't it, where we're at the point where this is now a right for people, because it's a need for sure, but it should also be a right as well.
It's become so important, and you know, we see that over the last year, how crucial online digital access is for people. And it's not stretching it too far to suggest that a lot of people would have struggled even more with their mental health and with their own well-being if it wasn't for the fact that they're able to continue to connect with people online. So that is such a crucial area for us now.
And Emma, from your point of view at Vodafone, I mean, I guess that would be, it is an essential. I mean, it's an essential service that you provide now. It's not just a lovely thing to have. It's a need. We need to have access to telecoms. We need access to internet. We need access to this technology.
Absolutely. I think for all aspects of our lives now, isn't it? I mean, the pandemic showed that we had to move our socializing online, work, education, access to healthcare. So if people can't access that, be that through skills, connectivity, access devices or accessibility, then there is this real danger of being left behind, which is why it's such an important issue for us to collectively tackle.
Emma Reynolds from Vodafone and Tommy McDade from Barnardo's, thank you so much for joining us here on Tech Talk this week. Robin and Tim back with us here, and a great opportunity to talk about something which, as we go into a new year, you know, this is a great conversation to have, isn't it? To really discuss the importance of learning technology and putting it up there alongside reading and writing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm conscious, by the way, that I always jump in first, so I had a little pause to see if someone's jumping there.
He's so kind, he's so nice, isn't he?
Which is funny because I was pausing to let you jump in first.
Yeah.
So
is this yeah, a love fest this week?
Mutual Admiration Society yeah. here, yes.
So yeah, just I think it is really important. Now, obviously, if you say it's as important as reading and writing, then people might well go on the defensive because reading and writing is obviously so key. But, you know, we're not diminishing in any way the importance of literacy. So we're just saying that digital is up there with it because that's how you communicate. That's what you use your literacy skills for. That's how you interact with the world. It's a digital first world in many respects. And obviously COVID has pushed that future much, much closer. Whether it's something that needs a huge amount of focus for future generations. I mean, I think almost by default, people are going to grow up with a certain level of digital skills. Obviously, accessibility is really, really important where there's an impairment involved. And I think that's where mainstream schools still need to make up a lot of ground in making sure that the skills that they're teaching to certain students. And I know it's not kind of part of the core syllabus either. I think, you know, it kind of happens by default in schools, but there's still a massive gap where, in this case, people with a visual impairment aren't necessarily very well supported. But that's kind of another discussion. But just to finish off my thought, and it was touched upon in that piece there, all of the, you know, the right tech in the hands of individuals and the right training, etc., is for naught if the things that you're accessing aren't inclusive. And, you know, that's my day job, advocating for and advising companies on digital accessibility of websites and apps and things. And, you know, there's still a long way to go there.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting, Tim, because, you know, we talk about all this and, you know, no one mentions Braille. And, you know, it depends your take on Braille. You know, the three of us maybe aren't the best examples of Braille users because, you know, we're not really Braille users at all. I mean, I use it sparingly. I know, Robin, you've used it sparingly. Tim, it wasn't really something you got into.
I took a class.
You took a class? Kind of. Yeah, okay. No, yeah, fair enough. Kind of. But I think that's the point is that the Braille not being part of our life is to our detriment, I think. I'm not saying that we are not successful people and we haven't been successful or we have been successful in spite of it. I don't mean that, but I just mean I know myself. I've watched as friends of mine who grew up at school learning Braille were on the path to greater things because they had that skill. They had the reading and writing nailed. And it's funny, we never seem to bring Braille into that discussion, and we should, I think, bring it in because it's just it's up there alongside reading, writing, because that's what Braille is. It is access to literacy for a blind person. So it's right up there, and it probably precedes digital literacy, in my view.
Well, as my father used to say to me when I was growing up, don't do as I do as I say. And, you know, just because I might have taken, you know, the first class of Braille from Hadley Institute, learning, I think it was the letter L was the first one. And then I was like, okay, yeah, I got to back off on this for a while. And I never went back to it. That doesn't mean that it's not important. The fact that we don't all three use it on a regular basis or at all sometimes, that doesn't make it unnecessary or not something that people should get into. I always encourage people, if you can, if you're able and interested, get into Braille, learn Braille, because it can be very helpful to you. And I say that, as we're talking about here, just the same as I would tell people to get into digital literacy, computing literacy. I was very lucky to be part of that generation, as I think all three of us kind of in a way were, that I was one of the first, you know, kids to transition from, you know, maybe the kids a few years before me were still learning how to type on a typewriter. I was learning how to type on an actual computer keyboard, you know, maybe by 10 years old, which was still kind of progressive at the time, you know, in the late 80s to be having an actual class in school where we're learning, you know, how to type on an actual keyboard and use a, you know, a computer, if you want to call them that at the time. Wow. They were pretty, pretty basic.
It's weird though. When I think back to my school days, I always think how progressive it was for blind people, not for anyone else in some weird way. I mean, I was using Apple Macs back then. Yes, I was even crowing about them back then. And, you know, it was like no one else was using them at the school. You know, everyone else was still, I mean, I had, in my class in 1993, I had a PowerBook. And, you know, I'm sitting in class with a PowerBook in a school where everyone's using jotters and pens and paper. And that was it, you know. And there I am working away on, I have to say, the most ridiculous computer. And even at the time, it was ridiculous. It had a ball for a trackpad. You know, it didn't have a trackpad. It had a trackball. That's how old the PowerBook was. Grayscale screen. It was all the rage, you know. It was the future. Mm-hmm. The future is grayscale. But yeah, just very interesting. But look, I mean, this is a conversation I'm sure we could talk about. But on the point about Braille and learning Braille, I am committing myself back into learning Braille properly and going into grade two properly next year. There's a Braille class starting with the Braillists Foundation. It starts in January. And I am really looking forward to trying that out. If you don't know about the Braillists Foundation, I think it's braillistsfoundation.org is their website. Go check it out. Brilliant team of people. Dave Williams, of course, who works here at RNIB, he is part of this. He's one of the main people who set this up. And it's a brilliant organisation. The sign up to the newsletter is so exciting to read about Braille from a not dusty place. You know, Braille always felt a bit dusty to me. And it just doesn't have that feeling at all when the Braillists Foundation took it on. So really excited to learn more about what they're doing. And they're doing classes over Zoom starting in the new year. So yeah, I'm going to be taking part in that with all this free time that I'm going to have. I'm going to be putting it to good use.
Free time.
I know. My wife's got plenty for me to do. Am I kidding? Now, I want to move on to a question that came in from Joe at the Technology for Life team. Now, this was actually posed to her by one of our customers who contacted us on the Technology for Life team phone line. Now, the question is, do you have a strong view on whether JAWS and Windows or VoiceOver and macOS is better for someone new to computer screen readers already using VoiceOver for iPhone and iPad? Keeping up. The customer who contacted us is open-minded but thinks from trying it out that VoiceOver on Mac is slightly more complicated to use, at least at the beginner level. Now, Joe agreed with this and advised that JAWS has the edge with Microsoft applications, but the customer's mainly going to use browsers and internet-based programs. Also, they're looking to be self-employed and not in a creative field, so thinks either platform would be okay for his mortgage advice business. What do you suggest? And Joe puts that question to us. Now, I'm going to come to you first, Robin, because you use both, like me. So where do you stand on that one?
Yeah, I use both every, you know, within the same minute I use both because I'm switching between them all the time. So I might not be the right person to ask because it's kind of muscle memory at this point. I think that Windows and the way you drive Windows using any of the screen readers, I think it's just a kind of a feature of maybe Windows itself. It feels like it's a more keyboard first operating system. I know that's not the case because, you know, it was definitely a GUI and you needed a mouse and that sort of thing, but keyboard is embedded everywhere. On the Mac side of things, it kind of still feels to me like it was a bit of an afterthought and a bit kind of hotkey soup sometimes. You have to use loads of different modifier keys. It doesn't feel as consistent or intuitive to drive macOS from the keyboard. I don't think that having prior knowledge of VoiceOver on iOS really offers you anything transferable when we're talking about which one you should choose on the desktop. So yeah, I would come down on the side of Windows, I think, and just see how far you get with Narrator. If you don't want to shell out for JAWS, you know, try then NVDA and see how far you get. I'm also going to, and this might shock you, throw in a vote for a Chromebook, because ChromeVox is startlingly good these days for the things that were mentioned there. You know, you, I think, might be able to get away and be surprised by ChromeVox on a Chromebook.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I will be honest, I think Chrome is slightly, in my view anyway, from my own experiences of it, slightly further behind all those options. Still feels a bit new to the party, and it is. It's considerably younger than any of the other options. And this isn't an Android thing. It's nothing to do with Android. People always think, here we go again, he's going to slaughter it. It's nothing to do with that. It's just that I... my own experience of it is it's not bad for some things. It is, and bear in mind what ChromeVox or Chrome OS is. It's a web browser, and that's all it is. So you start to get into third-party applications on a Chrome device, you've got a problem, because the accessibility doesn't follow, at least by my experience. I've not had many great experiences with the third party. But the web side of things, yes. If the website is accessible, the Chrome OS and ChromeVox will get you there. But going back to the specific point, because this is really a JAWS versus Mac question, it seems. Now, Tim, have you dabbled in Mac at all? Did you stick with JAWS at the beginning? Or
I've pretty much stuck with JAWS since the very beginning. I've been using it now for, oh gosh, I don't even want to do the math, maybe 13 or 14 years, something like that. I've been using JAWS, and 10 of those years were in a business environment, in a working environment. I have tried to dabble with Mac, but literally the first time I sat down to a Mac computer, my uncle is really big in the Mac, and I'm like, oh, well, I use VoiceOver on my phone, and I am familiar with, you know, the VO shortcut keys and how to do that and things. I had a general understanding, and I sat down thinking I, you know, have an extensive knowledge of screen readers, so I should be fine. I was lost. It didn't translate well from what I had been used to. And I knew it would be different. I knew it would have its own way about it, but I didn't think it would be that different. And I've tried to go back to it a couple times. Of course, when you connect a Bluetooth keyboard to an iPad or an iPhone, it's using the Mac type, keyboards, layout. And so I've gotten better with it over time, because of course, if I want to use that Bluetooth keyboard with my iPhone, I need to know those keyboard commands. And so I have learned them and made myself do that over time. So that's my way of using Mac instead of an actual, home, desktop Mac. But I use it sparingly because I don't know. I think it's just because of my experience using JAWS and how acclimated I am to it. And like Robin said, even NVDA or even Narrator at this point, I know that's been over a year since we've been starting to say that it's viable, but it still sounds funny to say, even after this year or so, that it's just like Narrator. I'm so much more used to, and that muscle memory, I'm used to the shortcuts of Windows that translate really well with JAWS and NVDA and Narrator and For me, Mac, I've actually heard this question a lot of times through Life After Blindness, the show that I do and other things that I've done and people I've spoken with. I've heard so many people say, it's great that people that have been using Mac forever and ever know these shortcuts and do well with it, but as a beginner, I just can't get going. How do you start on this? Where can I learn this? How do I learn this? Because it seems so much different than just using JAWS. And, I hear that so often, it must be true. And then you guys are always talking to me about it. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't know. I'll stick with what I know.
The thing for me is this comes at a really interesting time for me, because I have been dancing between these two particular systems for a long time. And, I've been finding, as Vision has let me down and continues to let me down, I've been using the screen more on the Mac and the screen hardly at all, if ever, on a PC. I don't know what it is about a PC. I just cannot, there's nothing I can see on a PC screen, which doesn't make any sense when you think about it. But I just think it's because the magnifier for me isn't quite as good as the magnifier or zoom, if you like, on the Mac. It just seems to work better. You can navigate more easily, but I don't like working like that because it really is a struggle. But I tend to do that, and I think it's just because I've got into that habit. So, the past couple of weeks, I've actually been spending a bit more time trying to get my head around the Mac, taking the view that, look, it must be me. right? This, it's got voiceover. It's got the ability to be used. It must be doable. And it is. And the interesting thing is a lot of it is down to just really, really throwing yourself into it. I think the problem with the Mac for me is that the learning curve is so steep. Right off the bat, the learning curve is steep. However, I will say this. If you are going to start out in a Mac, and it sounds obvious, but you know, when you start the thing up, there is that, you know, initial training which comes with it, which I have to say is pretty awful. It just puts me to sleep. But at the same time, if you can get through it, it does teach you the basics, the understanding of how to move around the screen and how to navigate in and out and use this interaction model. Your point, though, Robin, about the iPhone, I would have agreed with you recently, up until recently, actually, about, you know, the skills of the iPhone, using the iPhone, the gestures, not being transferable. Until you start using a touchpad, or a trackpad, actually, that is where the experience is very similar. If you were to use the trackpad to navigate, because the trackpad essentially is just like an iPhone screen, you can use the same gestures and you can interact and do things that way. But of course, it's different on a system like that because there's so much to deal with in comparison to an iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, the trackpad commander, as it's called, if you turn that on, then this beautiful large trackpad, I mean, it's the size of a small iPad really on my MacBook here. Yeah, everything under your finger, just like and swiping and all that sort of thing. But there's just, like you said, there's so much on a desktop version of an application or whatever it is. So for me, it's still a bit daunting. But I'll also shout out for the trackpad, numberpad commander as well. I mentioned before about having to hold down, you know, loads of different keystrokes and that sort of thing. If you turn on the numberpad commander, then everything's got a single keystroke, just like you can drive JAWS from the number pad. So I would definitely encourage people to look at that as well. So yeah, I mean, it's just very steep learning curve when you're learning any OS with, you know, to drive it from the keyboard. So maybe if you've had any experience of, say, Windows, use that, probably err towards that OS going forward, because there's some brilliant free options there as far as screen readers, and obviously VoiceOver is built in and free. The other thing, though, if you're expecting or if you're kind of used to a screen reader being updated on a regular basis, VO on macOS isn't that screen reader. It hasn't been improved for a long time. Yes, we've got a bit of kind of image auto recognition, it's, you know, in the latest version, but yeah, nothing really to speak of for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point about the knowledge of the operating system. I think it depends on what you've known before. If you're brand new to anything, then, you know, whatever you choose, you'll get used to, I guess. But yeah, I think if you've got some prior knowledge, and for me, it was always a Mac. I was more familiar with a Mac than I was a PC. Yet, at the same time, I'd say I became very familiar with the PC visually growing up. So when it came to using a screen reader, it kind of made sense to me. You need to have a bit of that knowledge. And obviously, if you don't have that knowledge and you're learning it completely from the start and you're blind, then, you know, jumping between all these different operating systems and the way they work and choosing an option that has got good resources behind it is going to be key. The good thing is you'll find lots and lots of JAWS users. You'll find Facebook groups with tons of people who are on there. You know, there's not as many people hanging around in the Mac world. It's the same with Chrome OS. It's one of the reasons why I think a lot of blind people don't touch Chrome, because there aren't a huge amount of people out there that can help and support with it in the way that you can with Windows. So, yeah, I mean, part of me still thinks, if I'm honest, that, you know, Windows and an iPhone is your best, you know, mix.
I mean, there's a reason why I keep jumping between the two on the one machine. Yeah. It's because I can't do everything on the Mac side.
That's right.
Why don't I just stick to Windows? Well, there are some cool things on the Mac side only. But so I like best of both worlds, but I couldn't live without Windows.
Well, look, in the interests of balance, let's talk about Android, because, you know, that's one thing we haven't mentioned. And, you know, interestingly, Dinos has got in touch with us this week from the Technology for Life team. He is here to share his thoughts on making the Android experience more accessible.
Hi there, my name's Dinos and I work for the Technology for Life team at the RNIB, and my technology talk today is going to be about applications specifically for the Android smartphone market that change the interface, make it easier to use the interface. A lot of these applications that I'm going to talk about today are aimed for somebody older who's just wants a stripped down version of the phone, just not as much going on, easier to navigate around. So I'm going to get it down to three applications. So that's all I'm going to talk about today, three applications. I'm going to keep it simple, so it's just only about three applications. And I'm going to start off with a new application that I like, and it's so simple, it's actually called Simple Launcher. So this application, I've actually used it on my father's smartphone to simplify the smartphone for him. It's an Android launcher software. My dad has had it on his phone now for nearly 2 years. It works really easy. What I like about it is it's free. It's an interface designed for the elderly with, most importantly, no pop-up advertisements to confuse, and the most important part, an easy-to-use interface. Some of the standout features of this app include large fonts and icons to view and operate with ease from the get-go. It also has a control center that makes it easy to find the general settings as well as weather settings, a safety lock, and it's easier to uninstall unwanted apps. Simple Launcher is also convenient for making phone calls by adding contacts to your home screen. So that's, you know, I can think of a lot of people that would love that simplicity to have contacts attached to the home screen. It also features a big red SOS button for making emergency calls. This, however, will require inputting from the control center. This launcher's speciality feature is it allows you to personalize your Android home screen. You don't have to worry about moving apps or deleting them with the edit lock switch. How many people put their phones in their pocket and they take them out and the apps are all in different places? Well, this one, you have to press the edit button to start editing the home screen. So it's like you've ironed like a transfer on a t-shirt. It's like you've ironed them there and you have to physically really go out of your way to change the layout after you've done it. But it's just makes it better because there's no accidental way. You reduce the accidental risk of changing the interface of your phone where the apps are and getting confused. So this what I love about Simple Launcher as well, it's free. If I've not already mentioned it, it's free. Moving on now to my second launcher application for Android. This, I would have to say, is Big Launcher. Big Launcher's made in the Czech Republic. It was actually one complete application, but it's been broken up into three applications to maintain GDPR rules. So it's actually Big Launcher, Big SMS, and Big Phone. Fantastic. Changes the interface of the front, makes it more simpler, 6 tiles or 5 tiles. You get more crisper visual markers on the phone to tell you when you've got a text message come in. It's actually easier if you've got the talkback switched on the Android phone to navigate around the phone, because instead of navigating many icons, you're just navigating through a few tiles for the screen. And when you want to see all the apps, the apps are just linear, one line after the other in really crisp fonts, so they're easy to view. You can alter the interface color and so on. I personally just prefer white text on black background for Big Launcher. But Big Launcher, there is a cost to it. It's a one-off cost, and I think right now it's the price of a cup of coffee for each of the three apps. So you'd be looking for about £12 for all three apps. But that's a one-off payment. You're not paying every month. So if you think to yourself, you're going to keep your phone for 3-4 years, that's a pretty good investment as apps go. Now, the third interface application app that I want to talk about is a new one that's on the market called Bald Phone. Bald Phone does change the interface of your phone. It tries to simplify it by making it go into less tiles and just sort of putting everything that you want right at the front. And it works to some degree. It's free. I don't believe I've tried it myself. I've not noticed any adverts on it. It's very easy to program it, to set it up to suit yourself. The only thing is with it, it's not as polished as Big Launcher. Big Launcher really does change the look of the contacts and the phone interface, and the SMS is just more crisper to view. So all in all, from the three apps, I would have to say Big Launcher is my favorite. I think Simple Launcher is fantastic for being free and simplifying the interface of your phone. And third, Bald Phone is worth actually downloading and giving a try because it's free. So you've got nothing to lose. So there you go. Three interface apps for the Android platform to try. Try them separately. Try them in your own time. See if they make a difference if you're using a screen reader. I think personally, I don't think you can go wrong with two free apps and one app that costs and one app that is separated into three apps, three separate elements that you pay £3.50 for or something each element. But the Big Launcher for me is the one that just does the whole, it just makes everything crisper for that person that's wanting to do the text messaging, wanting to get into their contacts, look at the contacts better. For me, Big Launcher. But there you go, three apps. Hope you've enjoyed this. Bye-bye.
Thank you for that. That was Dinas there from the Technology for Life team. Great to have you on, Dinas, and telling us some interesting thoughts on different launchers that are available for Android. Okay, let's get to these.
Email. We get email. We get your email every day.
I'm getting them right now.
Here's your mail today.
Email, 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 email. Yeah, every time I turn around, there's another email. It's great. I love it. Thank you so much for your emails. They do mean everything. Okay, so we got this one in, which I have to say, considering the announcement I was making this week, was difficult to read. Hi, guys. I am a 72-year-old blind retired educator in the US. I came across your podcast towards the beginning of the pandemic, and I don't think I've missed an episode since then. I enjoy your camaraderie, and I enjoy the banter from time to time. Mostly.
Wait, the time-to-time banter or enjoy it from time to time?
Doesn't clarify, but certainly I find the information is very useful. Certainly some of it is not as relevant as others, but I do find the podcast worth my time. I do hope you will spend even more time talking about practical things people can't do with their phones and tablets. I'm guessing there are many of us that do not use computers to the same extent as some other people do. I am also wondering if it might not be a good idea to add a female perspective to the conversation more often, or at least from time to time. Just a thought. Again, thank you for all the work you do in supporting those who have low vision or are blind. You're doing good work. That was Dave Leris in Lacey in Washington, USA.
Thank you, Dave. That was really nice.
That was nice. It was a really nice email. Kelly's been back in touch. She says, first off, I thought that I would try NVDA, as Sean Priest never seems to shut up about it. I'm impressed with it.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I know. I am impressed with it, although I am a JAWS user, says Kelly. It is similar to JAWS, but the only difference is that you don't use the number pad on the keyboard to navigate, only the normal arrow keys. However, you can still use the insert on the number pad to navigate the internet. I do believe the insert key is the NVDA key, which it is. Not a huge difference, but wish I could have Daniel, as I love Daniel. Oh, come on, Kelly. Daniel? Oh, worst voice ever.
Each to their own.
Can't stand that voice. You know, it's funny because I got the new Apple Watch last week. Well, I actually got it last week. I ordered it about, you know, a year ago, and it finally decided to show up. And of course, the thing is, when you turn it on at first, you set it up and it has Daniel on it. And I'm like, how can I change this voice?
Yeah. Yes.
But thankfully, they've updated it in such a way now that you can change the voice pretty swiftly to one of the new Siri voices, which is really nice. Don't know if that's a WatchOS 8 thing or what it is, but yeah, anyway, we'll talk more about that next week. Steve, you mentioned that you haven't heard of the Talking Parrot Plus. No, I haven't. Well, it was made by Cobalt Systems, and it was a pocket organiser specifically for blind and partially sighted people. At that time, mobile phones weren't accessible in the mid to late 90s. The problem was that although it used voice recognition and was simple, it did use a lot of batteries. What was that about in the late 80s and 90s? Everything just swallowed batteries whole. Mm-hmm. Yep. The batteries were meant to last a year. Probably lasted about 5 minutes, I'd imagine. If you took them out in one go, you lost all your data, which, you know, you put two batteries in one part of the device, then took the other batteries out and put them in the device so that you didn't have to take them all off, all out at once. Although it was an issue and it didn't catch on, Cobalt decided that it should be discontinued. Plus, it didn't always understand what you wanted if you had a cold. It had calculator, appointments, memos, and an alarm clock, as well as a phone book. It was good in that sense. And I never liked it purely because you had to keep buying four AA size batteries. Wow. It wasn't exactly popular, but thanks to Siri and Lady A, we can make appointments a lot quicker now. Thanks, Kelly.
I think they were AAA, which is one reason why they didn't last.
Is it AA? Not, oh, yeah, AA. I'm thinking of the big, big, big ones. What are they? The C? Is that type C?
No. Or something? Well, the C AAA are the really thin really ones. Yeah. And it was quite a thin device. I think I had one. I just couldn't remember what it was called. Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
All the lords and ladies have the good stuff, yeah.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Negative Julian's been in touch following Catherine's email last week. You might remember Catherine's email regarding using TalkBack and Synaptic and the challenges Catherine was having when you had to come out of Synaptic and into the Android world, essentially, having to deal with all that. Well, as a result of that, Negative Julian's been in touch. He says, I was just listening to the Tech Talk broadcast of September 2nd November and feel moved to reply to Catherine's email about what you referred to as stepping out of the walled garden of Synaptic. That'll be aimed at me. I completely agree with your recommendation that she contacts the support team at RNIB, but it may also be worth reminding everyone that TalkBack has a tutorial mode. If Catherine wants to go her own way or simply wants to reinforce what she has learnt, she could invoke it. The tutorial should auto-start on first use of a new installation of TalkBack, but it can also easily be invoked from an existing installation. From the Android home screen, either swipe up and to the right in one movement, or down and then to the right in one movement. This will bring up the menu list for Android Accessibility Suite. Move one finger down the list until you hear TalkBack Settings. Double tap that with one finger. Move one finger down the screen until you hear Tutorial and Help. On some devices, the list may be longer than the screen will show. In this case, simply swipe two fingers gently up the screen and the bottom of the list will appear. On all of my devices, Tutorial and Help is the third item from the bottom of the list. Once Tutorial and Help is located, single finger, double tap on it, another list will appear, the first item of which is Tutorial, single finger, double tap on that, and away you go. Catherine, whatever you decide to do, have fun. Remember, manufacturers want to sell their smartphones to as many people as possible, so they design them to be usable by idiots. A smart, intelligent woman like yourself will take it in your stride. Hope that helps a lot. Negative Julian. Yeah, I think that
such
helps.
A positive email from Negative Julian.
It doesn't
well
make
done.
Sense.
Very helpful.
There is a follow-up.
Oh, he's self-branded. I don't think it's justified. But
no,
yes,
I don't think
no.
so, no. But yeah, there is an interesting follow-up here from Nadia, who says, hi, guys, I wanted to get in touch to write and give a bit of clarification on Synaptic, which I've been using for many years. By the way, apologies if I've spelt it wrong. I don't know if you are. I'm listening to this. I'm using voice recognition software. Firstly, I think I can answer Catherine's questions, not meaning to sound patronising, but it might be worth checking to see if she has the latest version. When I first started using Synaptic, it was true that it didn't work with third-party apps and you still had to use TalkBack. However, a couple of years ago, there was a major upgrade and they realised, sorry, I beg your pardon, they released something called Synaptic Reader. It's a separate thing to Synaptic and it's included in the software installed when you purchase a phone or tablet. Now, depending on how old her current device is, Catherine might even be able to get it installed. Anyway, it basically means you can use third-party apps without having to use an additional screen reader. In fact, I believe TalkBack is now turned off completely on all Synaptic devices. Synaptic Reader is the default screen reader that opens with any third-party app. It also opens when you launch a website. I've filled in a form and done my food shopping using it. In fact, the only limitation is how accessible the app is in the first place. Correct me if I'm wrong, but even TalkBack and VoiceOver vary in their usefulness depending on how the app has been designed. Anyway, I now use Synaptic. It is true. Anyway, I now use Synaptic and Synaptic Reader for everything, and I've had an Android phone for years, and I still haven't a clue how to use TalkBack. Hope that helps. Catherine may need to upgrade her device, but if so, it's worth waiting for because they often have special offers for their customers. I would recommend calling them or emailing them to discuss the problem. Their customer service is second to none and they will take as much time as is needed to help you. They will also tell you quickly and honestly if they can't help you. On a different note, I think it was a lady called Charlotte who emailed in about buying a laptop from Sight and Sound. I just wanted to say that I did this a few years ago and it was a very pleasant experience. Not only did they install JAWS on it for me as I purchased Microsoft Office as well, they installed that for me. And I sent them an email with a list of other software and programs I wanted installing, and they did that as well. I could literally use a laptop out of the box, and I didn't have to waste time installing stuff. It was brilliant. If I have to buy another laptop in the future, I will go to Sight and Sound. First regards to all the Tech Talk team, Nadia. Wow. You know,
wow, thanks, Nadia. Yeah.
They don't need us, guys. Nobody needs us.
What are we doing answering people's emails? They should, if you just throw it out and next week the brilliant answers will come in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just absolutely an email great chain amongst each other. So yeah, that's fantastic.
That is almost it from us. Thank you so much for listening. Do keep your emails coming. You can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Don't forget you can follow us on Twitter as well and you can continue to do so after November and into the new year. I'm at Blind Guy Tech. Robin, you are?
At USA 2 Day.
Terrible. And Tim Schwartz, you are?
You can be in a couple of places, at Tim Schwartz and the number 5, or at Labcast, LABCAST, at Labcast. Yes, definitely follow all of us on Twitter so that you don't miss any of the goings-ons in our lives after November 30th.
Yeah, absolutely. Life After Tech Talk. There's a podcast name.
There we go. A spin-off and a half for you.
We'll be back next week. Thanks again, guys, and we will talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.